Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking about the Supreme Court ruling, June Medical Services v. Russo. It basically would require doctors performing abortions to have admitting privileges at hospitals within 30 miles of their facility. I hope I got that right. Stephanie Bangle, Executive Director of the New Orleans Abortion Fund, we now give you your time. Is that right? Is that basically what the bill said?
Yeah, that was. Thank you for having me on. That was a really good description of what was at stake in this case yesterday.
So, was that the intent of the bill? Because I don't know if you were listening or not. Angie Thomas, with Louisiana Right to Life, said this was about providing better care for women. Do you think that was the intent of?
I'm sorry. I've certainly heard that argument from our opponents. With the group, the Louisiana Right to Life and other groups. But the reality is that the intention of this law was nothing more than to shut down clinics. And, you know, I point to the very decision that the Supreme Court wrote yesterday. I can explain a little bit more if that would be helpful.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping you would.
Sure. So, you know, these admitting privileges laws, I want to be really clear. Louisiana is not the first state to introduce these, and we weren't the only state to introduce these. These admitting privileges laws in my universe, in the reproductive health rights and justice world, we call these laws trap laws or targeted regulation of abortion providers. These are laws that treat abortion providers as though they're somehow different from any other medical provider who provides care in our community. And so trap laws like this admitting privileges law in particular zoom in and focus in on abortion providers, and they hold them to standards that other providers are not held to. So with admitting privileges, for example, something that is a patently true fact, something that is incontrovertible, is that abortion is one of the safest outpatient procedures that someone can access. It's one of the safest outpatient healthcare procedures, period. It is safer than getting your wisdom teeth removed. It's safer than getting a colonoscopy. And a physician who's providing a colonoscopy is not held to these same standards.
So when you hear of women with being, I think violent was the way that Angie described the procedure a lot of times, in the way she was talking about it, I'm trying to be very delicate here. You're saying that's not the case at all, correct? That it is, according to statistics, a relatively safe procedure for the woman that is having the procedure performed?
I would point you to, yes, that is what I'm saying. And specifically, I would point you to some of the filings that were included as part of the Supreme Court case. Most specifically, there's two that come to mind. One is when we were filing these cases, or when this case was being filed, there was an amicus brief or a friend of the court brief that was filed by the American Medical Association and the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecologists. Those are the two leading groups for physicians who provide reproductive health care in the United States. And they filed an amicus brief saying that there was no medical benefit to this law. I would also point you to the very facts of the case that were introduced, both like in the written case and when they argued it in front of the Supreme Court, it was found that Hope Medical, June Medical Services, the clinic up in Shreveport, in 20 years of service, had only had 4 emergency situations in which someone had to go to the hospital. And that's, you know, they had provided probably 40,000 abortions in that time. It is an extremely safe procedure. I would also point out, and, you know, something that I hear a lot when I talk to folks about the admitting privileges question is people want to know, you know, what do admitting privileges actually mean? And are people who get abortions at risk if their physicians don't have them? And the incontrovertible fact is that they're not. Admitting privileges would never prohibit, the lack of admitting privileges would not prohibit someone from being admitted to a hospital in an emergency situation.
In terms of regret, if you will, after, have there ever been any studies, I'm going to what Angie was saying earlier, sure, too, about women that have had abortions, the mental complications afterward and so forth. Have there been any studies that have been done to show empirically, data-wise, whether or not this is something that is mentally damaging to women on the whole? I mean, everybody's different, right? But in terms of group data?
Yeah, I appreciate that question. There have definitely been lots of research studies that have looked at long-term implications or impacts of abortion access and whether or not they had any impact over people's mental or emotional health in the long term. And overwhelmingly, what this research has consistently found is that the overwhelmingly, by far, the most common feeling after an abortion is a sense of relief. Now, like you said, every human is different. I'm not going to deny that there are certainly some people who might feel regret later on. But I would also point to a major study that, actually, a book just came out about it. It's called the Turnaway Study. And the Turnaway Study looked at thousands of people who were unable to access an abortion as a result of these trap laws, like admitting privileges laws, and they looked at their longer-term outcomes. And what they found, and what has been found consistently, is that denying someone an abortion when they want an abortion, denying someone that reproductive autonomy to make a decision about whether or not they want to carry a pregnancy forward, denying that has far greater negative health outcomes than anything else. When people are forced to carry a pregnancy to term that they don't want, then they experience a great deal of regret of negative mental health outcomes. They experience depression and anxiety. Denying someone an abortion is far less safe than providing someone an abortion.
Is there a difference between being pro-choice and pro-abortion?
Oh, what a question. you know, at the New Orleans Abortion Fund, we call ourselves pro-choice and pro-access. And the reason that I say that is because, you know, you can be pro-choice all you want. You can put up a sign in your window. You can rah, rah, rah at the rallies. But if you don't have access to abortion, then it doesn't really matter what your political stance is. And so our work at the New Orleans Abortion Fund is pro-access work. We focus on helping people access the healthcare that they've chosen for themselves.
But I guess philosophically, I'm saying you're not happy when somebody gets an abortion. You're not advocating that be any type of birth control or anything else. You're just saying, for people that think, when you talk about the New Orleans Abortion Fund, it's not as though, or correct me if I'm wrong, Stephanie, I don't know, I'm asking, it's not as though this is, I mean, is this anything really that anybody ever really wants to have done?
Look, I think that this is a really common misconception that abortion is used, quote unquote, as birth control or something like that. But I'm going to be real. In Louisiana, it is hard to get an abortion. It's logistically complicated. There's only 3 clinics. It's expensive. I mean, that's the entire reason our organization exists, to help people afford this expensive health care. It would be illogical for someone to use abortion as, quote unquote, birth control. But to your broader question about whether or not, like, anyone ever really wants it, or how we, you know, how this falls along the spectrum of reproductive health outcomes, to me, abortion is a part of the broad spectrum of reproductive health care. And that includes birth control. That includes comprehensive sex education, which I would remind you, you know, people in Louisiana don't have access to. It also includes safe birthing. It includes having choices over where and how you give birth and whether you want a doula or a midwife to attend to you. And so, yeah, I am pro-abortion in that sense, because abortion is a choice and a resource that a lot of people in our community need.
Somebody texted in and said, denying someone an abortion forces them to take responsibility for their actions. But give me your response to that, because if you're going to, here's my response to that text, and you tell me what is yours. My response would be, okay, well, you can't force somebody to take responsibility, because Lord only knows if this child is going to be neglected or not. And if you are going to deny them, then you should be willing to take some responsibility as well for the child. So I guess what I'm asking is, philosophically, if somebody says that a person, they want to control the other person and say, or protect the fetus, whatever your, the baby, whatever your outlook is, or your philosophy is, your beliefs are, that then they kind of have a little bit of a responsibility to see to it that that child is cared for as well, if you're going to deny that?
I like that argument. That's something we've been using in the legislature for years. Truthfully, I think that that argument that was just texted to you is kind of disgusting. I know that that's rude, but like, that is just such a punitive framework to say that someone should be forced to carry a pregnancy and go through the trauma of birth and potentially raise a child to 18 or farther as a punishment. I mean, that's what this message you just received is saying, that they should be forced to, you know, deal with the weight of their own actions. I think that that's so disgusting. We are a community. I think we're a culture that believes in forgiveness and that believes in opportunity and individual autonomy, let alone the fact, you know, let alone the fact that people might be raped or otherwise assaulted. Sorry to your caller, but that really
well. No, it's
me
a texture, and that's okay. One thing that I philosophically struggle with, at least from not myself personally, but it seems to me like you either acknowledge that you're killing a human being or you're not. And if you are, well, then you're saying it's okay to kill a human being if it's in cases, if it's incest or rape or the health of the mother, or whatever. It would seem to me you're either all on one side or of this or the other. I don't know how there would be room for compromise. Do you think philosophically I'm off there or not?
You know, that's not really a debate that I get into.
Yeah.
But I will say that the vast majority of people across the country, and indeed in Louisiana, we've done some polling on this. Most people live somewhere in the grays. Most people don't, you know, wake up in the morning and slap a button on their shirt that says, I'm pro-choice or I'm anti-abortion. Most people live in the grays, and they recognize that there are nuances and that different circumstances require different responses.
I appreciate your time. I really do. Some news that, thank you, Stephanie Bangle, Executive Director of the New Orleans Abortion Fund. Some news that's breaking. Accused Deacon George Brignac has died. He is 86 years old. He was indicted for rape. He has a long history of child abuse, molesting kids, etc., behind him. And through some slip-up, he was, up until somewhat recently, reading in 2018 on the altar at Metairie. And, you know, I'd like to say, I'm sorry. Well, never. I won't say anything. He's dead. Let's just put it that way. He's 86, and now he's dealing with whatever he inflicted on younger kids when they were powerless, and he thought he had the power. We'll be back. WWL.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.